Today on the AF Podcast, after more than 4 months since everything is shut down, the NBA season is almost back. And I figured it's about time to discuss it, you know. So I'm joined today by South Sharad family member Big Brother Curtis, Hall of Fame member of Robert Wesleyan College in Rochester, Kenny Lee, and co-founder of the Skills Refinement Group, O'Neal Kamaka, as we discuss the NBA restart, the NBA campus, how the anti-black racism movement has made its effects on the NBA. We choose our dark horses of this restart, plus McCormaker's HBCU decision, and a whole lot more. South Sharad is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows from South Sharad Radio. You can tune in specifically on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Make sure you hit the like button as well as every single one of the 5 stars because, well, you love me and I would appreciate that. Also, check out my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthSharav.com. Once again, that's SouthSharav.com. So the latest since the recording is now Zion has left the bubble to tend to an urgent family matter. And well, he's going to have to quarantine from anywhere from 4 to 10 days, depending on if he gets tested every day while he's away from the bubble. If he comes back at all, depending on, of course, on the situation. So needless to say, this bubble situation is going to be very interesting, to say the least. Anyways, let's get started, though. It's the AF Podcast with Kyle C on South Sharad Radio.
Swish. Welcome to the AF Podcast with Kyle C on South Sharav Radio.
Welcome to the AF Podcast. My first guest has been on the AF before. He's the assistant head coach of Oakwood Collegiate, and he's the co-founder of the Skills Refinement Group, as well as an alumni of St. Mary's College. Please welcome O'Neal Kamaka to the podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
I have a bowl to pick with you. That's all I'm doing, Calvin. You did the last dance. You did the last dance, and I was not on one episode, Gretchen. One episode. You know I deleted your number? I deleted your number. I cut you off, cut you out of my life. But then you thought, you know what? But then I got over it. So not even a 2 minute Kamaka, what do you think? Yeah. Somebody who idolized Michael Jordan, loved, man. I was just there crying every episode when this guy put one on, just tears in my eyes. Do not have me on.
I mean, if you cut me off, I'm thinking that's more the pandemic talking, the quarantine talking. That's not
no, necessarily me. No, I cut you off. I was like, this guy's done. He's out of my life. I put you under do not answer whenever it calls. Do not answer. But whatever, I got over it. You know what? My wife told me to suck it up, so I got over it.
Yeah.
But I'm good. How are you, Calvin?
I'm good now. I apologize. You know, not really. But I apologize, man. I'm sorry.
Whatever, man. Whatever. Go on. Keep going with your introduction. Keep going.
My next guest is a Hall of Famer at Roberts Wesleyan College. And he's a former AAU coach who took his 6th and 7th grade squads to a national championship and also winning the 7th grade international championship in France. Please welcome Kenny Lee to the show. How you doing today, sir?
I'm good, young man. Good to hear your voice. Good to be on with everybody.
And last but not least, he's also been a past guest on the show. He also, in his past life, has played for Marist College, Team Canada, and the rumors on Instagram is that he's the reason why Eddie Murphy decided to film his team playing against St. John's when he went on a date with Lisa McDowell's sister and coming to America. Please welcome Big Brother Curtis to the show. How you doing today, sir? That's facts. That's actual facts. That's what I'm claiming is facts.
Yeah.
That's info I didn't know.
Thank you for the hype. Thank you for the hype. If you look at the video, the movie real closely, I'm the guy with the cast at the end of the bench. Well, and that's fact. But I'd like to put out one other thing, though, Calvin. Mm-hmm. As much as I've been contributing in your past episodes, the one that really, really made me feel like I'm really part of what you're doing and your future was when you hooked me up on that the Michael Jordan Last Dance. Yo, that, you know, I knew right there that one moment, I knew right there that we were blood, man. We were blood. We were tight as shit, man. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Much love.
Yes.
Moving right along.
Yes. That's good.
So,
Philippines, I hate you guys.
So, excuse me. I brought you guys along here today to talk about the one of the most important things that's coming up this month, that's happened in the NBA recently, Vince Carter's retirement. So I just want to get your thoughts. And no, I'm just joking. I'm joking. Let me pump my brakes there. I'm sorry. Let me pump my brakes. Just. Force it happen. Oh, I saw his face the other day. It all came back. Sorry. It all came back.
What did you call him?
Who? Vince Carter? Oh, I can't mention the nickname we used to have from back in the day. I'll leave that alone. He retired.
No. Did you call him? I call him Vince Carter with a W instead of a V.
Oh.
And then there's Vivian Carter, but we just stick to Vince. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I call him
Vince Carter.
The one, because I'm in a positive mood, you know, and I don't want to be disrespectful. Yeah. We had a name for him, like our friends and some of our family members. It rhymes with Regina Martyr, so I'll let that go. But he's in the Hall of Fame. Really bad. But he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
You realize he's a potential Hall of Famer, and he had some of his best years in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
He had three. Out of 22. That was it.
Yeah.
Three out of 22.
Kenny didn't live here.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, man. He had three out
of
22.
You know the man is sensitive now.
Oh, man.
And,
wow.
And to keep it positive, to add to what you guys are saying, his highlight package is probably some of the best you'll ever see in NBA history. Like I said, he's going to be remembered in Toronto in history going forward. And from all accounts, we hear that he's a pretty nice guy. With that said, I brought you guys here to start about the NBA restart, because I'm just going to skip over all of that.
We're not talking about Vince?
No, not at all.
Oh, man. Oh, damn.
We did that already. We did that already. Let's not do that
anymore. Oh, man. Damn. But, yeah, you know what? Yeah, let's skip over it, because the whole podcast would be venting on Vince.
We don't want to do that. Okay, before we leave Vince, I just got one thing to say, though. It still bothers me that they keep saying that he's the one who made basketball in Toronto.
Thank you.
It just pisses the shit out of me.
Thank you.
Like, if basketball didn't exist before Vince Carter brought it out.
Thank
here.
You.
Like, what the?
Thank you.
Man, that's
people
still
don't understand.
The shit out of me. Sorry,
people
Dan.
Like, oh.
Sorry, man.
Yeah. That bothers me, because I'm like, listen. I was a baseball player, and the reason why I started playing basketball is because when you get to junior high and you live in the hood, that's the only thing kids are playing. So it doesn't matter what you're doing before. When you get to grade 7, 8, or 9, all kids are doing is playing basketball, and that's what you're gonna play, right? So I don't want to hear that. People are just gonna be sitting on their ass doing nothing.
Don't let us go through all the greats that played in Toronto prior.
Exactly.
To
yeah.
Kenny's just twiddling his thumbs right now.
Kenny.
Like, wow.
Go ahead, Kenny.
Y'all need a couch. He's like, y'all need a psychiatry couch right now.
But this is good to hear, because growing up in the state, that's what I have heard. The narrative has been that Toronto basketball picked up ever since he got to Toronto.
Yeah.
And that he was the inspiration of all of the young ball players coming out of Toronto.
Yeah, no. It was, so a guy named Roy Russell, along with Wayne Dawkins, they started taking the AAU team to, like, Vegas to play in the Fab 48, and they actually won it. So they're the first Canadian team to ever win that major tournament. And that really got coaches interested. And then from there, a lot of the Canadian kids started going to prep school in the state. So they started getting seen at an earlier stage. Because, you know, Curtis, and other players, we played high school here, wherever, in Canada, 4 years, and then we get a D1 scholarship, and then we go to the States, and then, you know, we don't get a shot at the league. But when you have these Canadian kids that are going to prep school early, so now they're playing against future NBA stars at an earlier time, and they get seen by NBA scouts and GMs earlier, or they go to a showcase camps. So now NBA scouts and GMs are like, okay, I see how, you know, this player X matches up against Chris Paul, or this player matches up against Kyrie or whatever. And they're like, okay, this kid could play in the NBA. As opposed to us just playing 4 years, you know, high school here. And then they're like, well, who will we battle test it? Because I don't really think a lot of NBA GMs and scouts put, because college basketball is so structured that they really kind of designate certain players based on what they did in high school. And I think the perfect example of that was like somebody like Felipe Lopez. I remember Felipe Lopez was coming out of high school. This guy was, what, averaging 50 points on the cover of Slam magazine. He goes to St. John's, has an average, you know, career average about 13 points a game. And he still got drafted by the NBA. I'm like, how the fuck does that happen? Like, this guy, you know, was basic in university, and he gets drafted to the NBA. And, you know, it was based on all the stuff that he did before.
So two things I'll say that before we jump to Calvin's topic, and this is for Kenny and any Americans that's listening, is that when I went back in 85, when I went to Iona on basketball scholarship, that was the first time I ever played organized games in the U.S. So it was like a shock to the system. So when O'Neal was saying AAU, when those younger kids were going to Fab 48 and competing at that young age and winning, when I did it, that my freshman year was the first time I actually played in the States, because we never crossed the border. So nobody ever heard about you. And for you, you never got the experience to see the faster game and how to change your game up and so forth. So I had to redshirt that first year, number one, because I was too slim, too skinny. And I never, the physicality of the game was just a total different for me, right? So you have to learn how to play the American way. That's number one. Number two, and I think it's rarely mentioned, is that by the time Vince Carter got to Toronto, guys had already played D1 ball, and they came back and they started mentoring younger cats and coaching. And that's where the motivation, like when your coach now, it was not just your local gym teacher or whatever, but it was a kid who played at St. Bonaventure or Canisius or whatever. And you're like, okay, that's my coach. He did it. And your coach is telling you, yeah, you can do it too. That was the motivation. Your guys, there was a ton of guys who played D1 ball, not in the Power 5 conferences, but like myself, like at an ECAP. And I came back, I started coaching at like Eastern Commerce and coaching the AAU teams and so forth. That was a mentorship to all the younger guys coming up. Then Vince Carter came in, but that progression was already, the movement was already happening 20 years before.
It had already started.
20 years before.
I got it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
It really started too with Isaiah Thomas when the Raptors came in 95.
Yeah, that picked
That's
up
when it really well. Started too.
Yeah, because kids can now, when we grew up in Montreal, I was like, we saw NBA twice a week, Friday nights and Sunday afternoon. Friday
Sorry, go ahead, Kenny.
With the West Coast game, Sunday was four teams, so either Boston or Philly. Friday was always L.A. And that's all you can see, you couldn't touch it.
So the funny thing about that now is that Ontario is a place where a lot of coaches are looking for some talent in that area to come to prep schools even earlier now.
Yep. Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I'm dealing with that now because I coach an AAU team, and it's finding kids prep schools, getting them, you know, I got four kids that can really, really, really go. So trying to get them to prep schools. Coaches are looking at them in, you know, coming in for their freshman year, sophomore year to start. And, that's what it's about. That's what's getting these guys, you know, to the next, getting them to play in the NBA and get them to the next level. But sorry, Calvin,
don't
you're saying something about the NBA.
No, don't worry about me. I was looking for my ink block Bristol boards to show you guys, just in case you want to go through more psychiatric treatment for Vince Carter. I was just scrambling looking, so don't worry about me. We're good. It's all good. I'm glad you guys got the vet.
Thank you. So I got the beer. I got the Stella in my hand, and I'm venting. I'm good.
I see. So like I was saying before, like I brought you guys here today to talk about this NBA restart. For everybody that knows, the NBA is going to be starting back their season on July 30th. And I haven't said much about sports, much less the NBA on this platform, since the league shut down on March 11th. And I'll get into that, my reasonings, in a moment. But I want to ask you guys, what are your thoughts on this NBA restart and this whole NBA bubble situation? So, Kenny, being that this is the first time you're on the show, I'll start with you.
Well, I think that this whole restart is going to be an opportunity for other sports. Being that this country, we're a copycat country. So somebody else said something and they're somewhat successful at it than other sports. Like the NBA, when they shut down, then other people started shutting down. College basketball started shutting down. And so I think a lot of schools, I know with colleges, they're probably looking at how successful this event is going to be, this NBA reopening is going to be, to determine when and if they're going to start basketball this upcoming year. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And then there's some NBA players that that want to make a stand, that want to talk about some of the other issues outside of the world of basketball. And there are people that are all over the place with that. So this was a very interesting time. I hope and pray that whatever happens, that we don't lose any lives, first and foremost. But when it comes to the game of basketball, it's going to be interesting. I know I've got two young boys who absolutely love LeBron James, and they're thinking that this is their opportunity to win a championship. And I told them, do not be surprised if somebody wins that no one else expects to win. Because it's going to take some time for chemistry. You don't know who is 100% healthy. So this is going to be a very unique time for the NBA.
Okay.
And what about time in later?
And what about you, Curtis?
It's a very curious time for me with the NBA. I think no matter what happens, whoever wins, you may as well put 10 asterisks behind the championship. Because what the F does it mean to win this year? You have teams, like, you look at a team like the Nets. They're missing like 4 to 5 starters. Like, at any given point, an epidemic could break out, and you can have a finals with a team that's managed to have a starting 8 that's healthy as shit, and have a team that's starting 5 G League players. So to me, it's pretty much, it's fruitless. It's not the champ. Whoever wins this year, it doesn't mean shit in the big scheme of things. You know, I think it's about economics. You know, about putting, you know, honoring contracts, financial contracts, TV contracts, so forth, and putting money in the owner's pocket. Because I don't know, it just doesn't mean anything to me. What, you know, guys are already dropping off with testing positive, and at any given time, you can test positive, and you imagine in the finals going on, and you know LeBron James tests positive, he can't play, and two of the three starters test positive, they can't play, and then they're playing it with three guys and against a dominant the Toronto Raptors, for example, who's healthy, like. All the LeBron's fans, everybody's going to be bitching. Toronto shouldn't have won. They skated through because every team they played was sick and all this. There's always going to be asterisks behind every single win with this NBA reopening. And I don't know. To be honest, I would have just shut it down and get ready for next season. But, you know, to me, it's all economic.
Well, I mean, definitely. I mean, they can't shut it down because there's $1 billion of lost money if they don't continue the season, and nobody's eating that. Plus the salary cap is going to change significantly going into next season, which, you know, that's affecting money for players trying to come up. What about you, Anil?
I'm
it's basketball. I'm excited to see basketball again. I think if those scenarios, those negative scenarios play out like Curtis just mentioned, then I think, yeah, there'd probably be an asterisk. But if, let's say, everybody is equal, let's say everybody is healthy, because really, you're looking at the teams that are, like the Brooklyn Nets, they weren't going to win shit anyway, so I don't care that, the, you know, like, who's not there, dumb-witty, like, they weren't going to do nothing anyway. So, if everybody, let's say everybody's healthy, there's no issues, then, you know, there's no asterisk for me, but I'm looking forward to the season. I'm looking forward to seeing basketball. I was watching the basketball tournament yesterday, and you know, I didn't realize how much I missed basketball. I thought, okay, you know, there's no ball, whatever. I've been binge watching shows left and right, and then watching the TBA, I was just like, you know, it was just like my basketball mind started kicking in again. I'm watching, looking for plays, guys cutting, guys not cutting. Why did this guy score? How come that guy was left open? You know, little stuff like which, and I, you know, missed that with my mind, you know, working. So I enjoyed watching live basketball and the guy hitting the buzzer beater, Travis Diener. Diener. And I even Googled him. I'm like, okay, this guy killed a hoop back in the day, went to Marquette. So, you know,
I'm going to call with D-Wade, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I play with D-Wade. Right. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. So I'm looking forward to, you know, to NBA basketball again. And because to me, that sort of is a reminder that things are getting back to some kind of
normal,
you know, what some kind of normal, what things used to be. And it kind of gives me hope and, you know, looking forward to things getting back to the way they were, I guess. And, you know, I think that's what we all want, just things to kind of get back to how, you know, our regular day-to-day routine, watching basketball and this and that and doing our regular the stuff that we normally do. So having basketball back, and, you know, probably baseball will follow, whatever, is kind of, you know, an indication that we're maybe getting back to our normal routine, even though I don't think things will definitely be normal for a while. And definitely until they get a vaccine. But that's my thoughts on it.
What threw me off is yesterday or the day before, and I was watching TV, I think it was yesterday, and they said Westbrook and Harden tested positive. And yeah. I'm like, wow, this shit could happen right in the finals.
Yeah.
You know, because it can happen any single time.
Well, Harden didn't test positive, actually. He actually showed up at the bubble last night, according as of this recording. He showed up to the bubble,
okay.
So he's good. But Westbrook, yeah, is tested positive. Go ahead, Kenny, before I get my opinion.
Now, if the NBA, I mentioned before that, if, you know, people tend to copycat other people's success. And you just talked about the TBT tournament. They talked about their steps and processes that they went through. It's a shorter period of time. It was a two-week tournament. But during that two-week period, not one of their players, and they went through some testing and quarantining before they got there. And then once they got there, they went through certain steps and they conducted interviews a different way. You know, you had to have the 6 feet distancing. You had the extended mic to make sure that people weren't close while they were interviewing the players after the games. Not one player got tested positive during that 2 week period. If the NBA is smart, they would make sure that they would do whatever those guys did for that 2 week period. To ensure that this is obviously going to be a lot longer. It would be smart for them to emulate what those guys did.
The only difference is the TBT has got a bunch of cats who are trying to find a platform to showcase their skills. There, a lot of them are playing overseas, trying to get to the league. So they'll do whatever, they'll follow whatever guidelines is given to them. The NBA cats, these guys are making 15, 20 million, 30, 40, 50 million. I think it's going to be harder to keep them under wraps. As opposed to the TBT. It's going to be hard. Like, they were a successful formula, but it's going to be harder for the NBA players to follow that formula because they're complaining about the hotel. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And to add to that, I mean, a couple of things. Number one, I think the success of what's been going on with the TBT is a good start because the NBA is going to be throwing way more money into what they have at their campus as opposed to what the TBT has done. Even though they're getting recognized and getting showed by ESPN and everything else, there's going to be a lot more money pumped into that and a lot of the more safety protocols because some of the things that you're hearing so far is that anybody from the media to the players or the coaches, anybody that's at this campus, as soon as they leave their room, they're getting a temperature reading, and they get tested every day. They also have, I don't know if the bubble ring is coming into effect, but they got the wristband that gets them to all areas. From what I understand, I think it tests your reading too. So if your temperature does go up, it flags it right away. So, I mean, there's things that are going, and you know, there's going to be for the NBA to be doing this. And I think the total budget of it was at least $150 million for this campus. So, you know, they're going to get the best of the best in terms of the testing. With that said, you're already seeing people violate the bubble. you're already seeing guys getting at least two players have already been suspended, been forced to quarantine for the next 8 days, 8 to 10 days, because they stepped outside of the bubble already. Because that's the thing, it's a mandatory thing that you have to stay in there, but it's not jail. You can step out of the bubble if you want to step out. But the thing is, if you do, you know that basically once you come back, you're being quarantined for the next 8 to 10 days right off top, even if you're totally fine, you know. So that's the part of when, and you know, with so many moving parts, there's 22 teams, which I think is too much teams, but I understand it because they're trying to recoup this money. I think another part of it is, I think reason why they went with so much teams is to make sure, I feel like part of it is to get Zion involved, because just to reap the benefits.
Did you see their schedule? Hold on. Did you see their schedule?
They have the weakest schedule.
The weakest schedule, right?
Yeah. It's a joke. It's a shame. It's a shame, man. It's disgusting. They even try to hide it. They're playing UFC, Ryerson. Sorry, Kenny. Those are local university teams in Toronto.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. But hey, they got to do what they got to do, man. They got to do what they got to do. Nobody's complaining. I ain't complaining. I want to see Zion tear off the rim. I'm actually looking forward to that. I'm actually looking forward to throwing some alley. Melo throwing some alley-oops to Zion. I'm actually looking forward to that. So
Melo all of a sudden started looking like a better point guard once Zion came in.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So now, you know what? Honestly, Curtis, if it was just regular season, I probably would have been, if you know, some shenanigans were going on. But at this point, I'm like, whatever, man. Bring it on. Bring on. We know they're not going to last. They're not going to last, right? even with Zion, they're not going to last. But it's still going to be entertaining, right?
So it's funny. I'm not going to call names, but I heard from a good source that the players are saying they're not going to wear the bands or the rings. There's no way they're effing wearing it. This is last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's 100%, a good source.
I did hear that the NBA tried to host a party for the NBA ball players, and Dwight Howard was the only guy that showed up.
the thing that seems to be kind of taboo that people don't want to talk about is the some of the women trying to cross this bubble, if you can say that.
Oh my! Oh wow!
You know, I know Stephen A. Smith kind of attested to it. He's like, okay, let's be real.
I thought there's security and all that. So how could they get across the bubble?
I don't know.
Or get across the threshold.
I don't know, but.
I've heard, I can't tell you it's a reliable source because it's from one of my sons, that they've invited some women into the bubble.
Of course.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're asking guys to practice abstinence for the next 3 months, up to possibly until October. I don't know if that's happening. Let's just be real. I don't know if that's happening.
No. One thing those guys need is their weed and women. So that ain't happening. Trust me on that.
Well, you know already that the NBA took all drug testing essentially off the table restart. So
there you go.
It's gonna feel like a Buju concert.
It's gonna be interesting.
What do you guys think about the NBA? giving his players a list of approved sayings, words that they can put on the back of their jerseys during this time.
I kind of get it because I'll say, you know, you want to, you know, like again, we just talked about how these guys need their weed and women. So some guys, you know, they're not going to make the, you know, the best decisions with probably what they're going to say. And so, you know, I guess in the politically correct age that we live in and, you know, not trying to offend too many people, I think, you know, I can see why the NBA did it, you know, to kind of keep it relatively not going to really cause too much controversy. But I get why they did it. So, I mean, I understand, you know, I know the players, obviously, some players want to, you know, you know, some players want to, you know, obviously want to have their original thought or say something that is more meaningful to them. But I don't think the NBA might want somebody on their shirt, fuck white people or, you know, kill the police or, you know, F the police or something like that. So, you know what I mean? Like, you know, bumping an NWA, you know, or have a quote from, what was it? Eddie Murphy, Saturday Night Live, when he's doing that reggae, kill all the white people. You know, you don't want the best of Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live when he's doing that reggae, and it was, but yeah, you know, I'm joking, but like, you know, some guys might do that, like, NWA, F the police, or something like that.
That's going to cause some controversy. So what you're trying to say is you don't want to give J.R. Smith the responsibility to give it to people in his own name.
Exactly. No. Okay. I definitely don't want to give J.R. Smith that freedom to choose what he's going to say.
So I plead ignorance to this. This is the first I'm hearing of this. So is this? Are you speaking about like warm up jerseys?
No, the names on the back of their jerseys. They could change it to
names
like
on
Black
the back
Lives
of their
Matter.
Jerseys. So they can.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
no justice, no peace, things of that nature.
Yeah. So instead of saying LeBron, you know, James. So instead of LeBron having his last name, he could have like maybe Breonna Taylor or whatever. You know what I mean? Or F the police. You know what this is?
That's not on the approved list.
You know what this is? It's another great moneymaker because it's another jersey somebody can sell.
Right. That's a good point.
I can't help but think business economically. It's another big moneymaker. But everybody will want that jersey that's socially, it's showing social justice. Right? So I think it's a brilliant moneymaker for these owners. It's a way for them to recoup even more money on top of what's going on.
Yeah. So Curtis, they have like approved phrases: Black Lives Matter, say their names, vote, I can't breathe, justice, peace, equality, freedom, whatever, enough.
Mm.
Power to the people, justice now, say her name. You could have it in French, si se puede. Liberation, see us from here.
So check it out from an economical standpoint. You have eight games or whatever game, and you pull out eight jerseys. LeBron has eight different jerseys with eight different sayings. Boom.
Yeah.
That's money.
Yeah.
Kenny, LeBron has already said that he's not going to use any of them. Yeah. He's just going to have his name on them. Jimmy Butler said something very interesting. I don't know if you guys heard this.
I heard it.
But he wanted to keep the back of his name blank.
Yes. Yeah.
And he said he wanted to underscore that if he wouldn't be viewed any differently than anybody else of color if he wasn't a basketball player.
Right.
But the NBA hasn't approved that yet.
Right. That was a great point.
I did hear about that. I'm like 50-50 with it because I understand where that's going, and I can see Curtis's perspective for sure. I think it didn't seem like, even though this was approved by the NBAPA, it doesn't seem like everybody was approved of some of the sayings and different things or the leverage they could use for changing their names on the uniform. But I mean, at this case, it's like, I don't think you can make everybody happy in this situation. So, I mean, if you can get the most names that you can get, like, I think if somebody's allowed to wear George Floyd on the back of their shirt, I think that would be cool, you know, because already you're hearing Kyle Korver. Stated that he's going to have Black Lives Matter instead of Korver on the back of his jersey. So
yeah, but that's the funny thing. So Breonna Taylor is not here, or George Floyd's name's not on the approved phrases that they can use.
Right. Which I think a lot of players would have used those yeah. two for sure, or like a Sandra Bland, or you know,
yeah, or Castillo, Tamir Rice, or
yeah,
whatever.
Tamir Rice, you know, the, exactly, so, Trayvon Martin.
So they have Tamir Rice and Trayvon Martin.
No, they don't.
They have no names. You can't. They don't have all. They don't have only phrases. They have. You can't.
All these phrases.
Or, yeah. Yeah. Or there's no names. It's just phrases. Anti-racism. I am a man. Whatever. Speak up. Right. Yeah, yeah. But they don't have any Breonna Taylor or Tamir Rice.
You should have. I think you should have been allowed to use their names, because I think if the names would have been allowed, I think a lot more players would be using. And not to say they're exactly. not going to be using the phrases, but if I have a jersey and it has Floyd's name on the back, like. Yeah, even if you want to resell it, that would be huge, and hopefully that goes to the family and not just the league. But I think, and maybe that's where some of that kicks in too, where
that's probably like, yeah, like that's probably
Breonna
it too.
Taylor is like they're gonna profit off her name and then give like a percentage of that money back, which I think is wrong too, in that sense. So right. it's a bit of a clusterfuck.
Here's the thing, and so I love the game of basketball, but outside of the game of basketball, to me, the fact that they came up with an approved list, it underscores the fact that these NBA ball players, as wealthy as they are, don't have nearly as much leverage as they think they do.
Right.
And in that, they can only do what the NBA and the owners will allow them to do.
Yes.
And so strategically, I hope that there are some people that are working on, because I know these changes won't happen overnight, but I hope that there's some people that will work on the fact that these players can use their power and their influence or their social media influence to leverage more meaningful change in it. So you can have more black coaches, more black general managers, and allow these people the opportunity to enlighten other people in the community and encourage other people in the community to do other things besides just playing a game of basketball.
Yep. Well, sir,
you know what? To piggyback on that, Kenny, I've been saying since the NBA bubble, the talk about NBA bubble was the start. I keep saying, if I'm a player, I would advocate for, if I'm going to go in the bubble, the owner's got to go in the bubble.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're telling me I gotta change my whole life for the next 3 months or whatever it be, but you're home doing whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. and right. it kind of goes to what you're saying. They don't have as much control as they think they do. At the end of the day, you know, it is a business and they're working for somebody, but that somebody has total control over the outcome of the league and the decision making of the league and so forth. You know, because to me, I'm like, hey, if this COVID thing is as real as people are saying, and you're willing to have me play against, yeah, we're doing a lot of testing, but we're going on there and rubbing shoulders and coughing and playing and sweating each other, and you're in Beverly Hills in your mansion watching video, watching TV of us playing,
mm-hmm.
like,
mm-hmm.
I was like surprised that didn't get pushed in the media at all. I didn't hear anybody talk about that.
Well, I did it, and this is kind of why I love the whole thing. I know some people had problems with the direction and some of the things that Kyrie Irving was saying in terms of almost leaving like a faction of the players not wanting to play and not wanting to do this based on the anti-black racism and the civil rights issues that's going on right now. Personally, it's like I loved it. I loved it. I loved the fact that this dialogue was being had, and I love the fact that somebody like Kyrie, even though I know some people don't trust his character totally for some reason, but you know, because my whole thing, especially this last few months, has been about the prospect of what are we doing after the protest is over? You know, as black people, like people are protesting all around the world. You know, there's protests still going on, but not at the same intensity as it was before, right? So like, you know, there's a lot of people out there that really do believe that attention is going to be, the focus is going to be quite the same, because you're going to be going to your TV, you know, watching sports, watching basketball, and not focusing on what's happening with the George Floyd situation and the hundreds of others that are you know, being brutalized, that's continuing to happen. I see that too, that are willing to sacrifice even that $1 billion, you know, to shake shit up. You know, so to use, and that's the thing, like to use your, and I heard Lou Williams talk about this. The other in an interview, I can't remember which podcast it was or which show, but he talked about how, you know, the NBA is giving you the space to use your platform, but you got to realize not all 12 players are going to have the access to that microphone to use their platform, right? Like usually when you get interviewed for the playoffs, it's usually the best players or maybe the one or two players that had or role players that had a great game that get to go onto the podium or get to speak to the media. Right. No, most of the time it's one or two players and the coach and that's it. So the eighth guy on the team isn't going to have the platform to use to talk about his social issues. You know what I mean? Like unless they're really going to go out of their way to do something different there. Like that's not going to happen. Oh, sorry.
You know, the funny is when I first heard about Kyrie's point of view, I was like, wow, this young man doesn't mind being a rebel, a radical, mm-hmm. or someone that's willing to stand and sacrifice something. And I don't know if this is true or not, but then I started hearing that the only reason why Kyrie was taking that stand was because he wasn't eligible to play, he was not going to be invited into the bubble.
Right.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but it kind of, for me, it took a little bit out of it. I wish it was authentic and real, but the fact that they started leaking that story out, you just wonder.
And we don't know for sure if that's
true.
Did he
really mean that? And we don't know. Yeah. Right, right.
That's the thing. And you're right, but I mean, yeah, like I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to believe in that aspect of it, whether that's the case or not. Like hopefully that's not the case. But like I said, I mean, until we hear more about it, I say this to say, like, you know, there are other players that were justified in feeling that same way. You know what I mean? Because they had that Zoom call, which is about, like, I think it was at least 80, 85 players that were on there discussing it. And I mean, ultimately, like, I always believed, I think it would be a beautiful thing. I just thought there was just too much money on the table for why that was going to be, that was going to take more precedence than what those guys were talking about.
I would love it for the NBA players. So in their world, if they try to make an impact in their world, like, for example, how many black general managers do we have in the NBA? Black coaches do we have in the NBA?
Yeah.
How many times does a white coach get an opportunity to fail 5 or 6 times and still get another job? Mm. Whereas if you're a black coach and you get an opportunity and you fail, you might get a second opportunity. But after you get that second opportunity, don't look for a third.
Now, Mitchell.
I would love, exactly. And that man knows basketball.
Well, he does.
How many of those players? So you've got all of those NBA ball players. And one of the things I admire about LeBron James, his attorney, his agent is black. How many of these NBA ball players have black agents and managers?
Yeah, it's not a lot.
Those are the things that they need to work on, in my humble opinion.
No, I just, I think there definitely needs to be definitely more black coaches, more black GMs, everything, executives, definitely need to see more.
And at the same time, we have to start pushing our kids to believe that there's more to the game than just being a player.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There's a business end to the game, and the business end to the game has a longer shelf life than the players.
Yeah,
we got to start pushing that narrative.
Well, that's the thing, right? It doesn't. The dream doesn't end just because you don't make the league, right? There's the as you're seeing with like people like the Mike Georges and that, for example. Like there's a life past playing, right? That you could definitely take advantage of.
Gary Durant.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a real thing, but people don't see. People look at it like, you know, their bubble is just not their bubble, but their mindset is like they can only do one thing, and you know, if they don't make it in this sport, it's like, what else do I have to offer to the world? But you've accumulated a lot of time working on your craft. A lot of knowledge has come with that, and that could be shared. You know what I mean? Through coaching, or you know, you pick up some extra skills, and now you can translate that to managing a team, putting together a team. You know what I mean? Running business affiliated with the sports. You're right. Like that's a big component of it too. That's a big.
I'll throw another name, local name, Kamaka, Rob Wilson. You know, he's an agent. He's got an agency called Basketball Beyond Borders. He runs it out of California, out of the LA area.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's got about 50 to 70. He's been doing it for about 20 years now. He's got about 50 to 70 all European players, but high level, like Chinese players.
Nice.
Yeah, he's doing really well.
Good.
That's really good.
That's really good.
Yeah, you know that. That's good, man.
He's been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, he's been.
He's hard pressed to be able to play ball for 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's a good point.
Yep. Exactly. That's it. That's exactly what I said. You know, the shelf life is a lot longer, and that's all. You know, that's his business. That's all he does. So the shelf life is a lot longer. When your knees goes and the ankle is broke, you can still make money at the game.
Your mind's still there.
Yeah.
Your mind's still there. And I think that part of what you're talking about, Kenny, is part of the reason why, like, as I was saying in the beginning of the podcast, like, I haven't really focused too much on sports, really, in terms of my pause the last few months, because outside of the Last Dance thing, sorry, O'Neal, because the whole factor of it
about
is
to hang up.
but the whole thing of it is just, you know, between like what's going on like on the streets in terms of the civil unrest and everything that's happening right now, obviously, you know, like the seriousness of, you know, how everybody feels about the COVID situation, and then just the basketball aspect of it, just thinking like you've lost momentum, you know, from March for something that has to restart all over again. Like, this break is as long as like an off season. You know, this is like a new season now. You got rookies that are coming back into this campus that are no longer rookies. You got guys and rookies that's changed their bodies during this pandemic. Like, we're talking about Zion before. Like, Zion shredded. You're seeing a bunch of players looking like completely in shape, like an off season. Like, they've improved during that period in time. You know, and as we were mentioning before, in terms of you could see a scenario where a player comes in and, you know, during this, like, God forbid somebody tests positive during this period, you know, that can change. Like, they're out for the series, not even a game. They're gone for the series. You know what I mean? Like 8 to 10 days, you're pretty much missing the series. You know, God forbid somebody tests positive in game 3 or game 4, their series is done. You know what I mean? Even, like, it, while they're sitting in quarantine. So, like, they're, again, like, if the Raptors are playing the Bucks and Giannis and Chris Middleton test positive, like, it's gonna change the way you even watch the series. Like, the fans that were gonna look to watch that before aren't gonna watch it now. You know,
So the owners might hide the test. think about that. NBA Finals.
Yeah, I was just
NBA
thinking
Finals.
That.
You're thinking that, right?
That.
Shit. But hide that shit.
Especially if they can't keep these players in their rooms.
You know,
they just might do that.
Yep. Shit.
They're like, listen, are you sure you're feeling okay? You feel all right, right? You feel all right, right? and I think part of this thing too is that, and I mean, I know O'Neal, we were kind of talking about this before, but the loss of not having fans at these games, I think it's major, especially during these big games during the playoffs, because it's going to take some of the pressure away. To me, especially NBA playoffs, you find out about yourself when you're, you know, you have 20,000 fans either supporting you or hating your guts. You know, for example, I went to, you know, years ago, I went to a playoff game, and that atmosphere when you're in a playoff game is 10 times different than it is in a regular season game. I remember going to one of these playoff games, and I literally did not sit in my seat for 2.5 hours. I was standing on, we were standing the whole entire time, but so was every other fan, you know, and that plays up, that surge of emotion plays effects on the guys on the court. You know what I mean? So not having it there, it just feels like a really extremely highly, highly sophisticated, pickup game.
But I think that benefits the lower seeded teams, though, because you got nothing to lose, and now you don't got the pressure of home court advantage playing away.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a team that is plays balls to the wall and just plays hard and just They don't care about shit. Young and they don't know better. And now you put them in a situation, they don't have to go into LA and play the Clippers at a home court. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what do we got to lose?
You make a great point, because a lot of the young teams, when they get into the playoffs, they play better at home.
Yeah.
They play terrible away. Now, all that scenario goes away in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, outside of the courts being, you know, that's the only home court advantage, that you might be playing on your own court for your quote unquote for your home game, but other than that, there's no real advantage. So I think like that, and I remember Shaq was saying this a few weeks back or a couple months back, where he was like, you know, some of your best games was looking in the crowd and seeing that fan, you know, throwing middle fingers up at you, you know, in the second quarter, and that rouses you up. You want to shut that fan up and everybody else, especially on the road, you know, and being that taken away, it's like we're missing balls. So like, you know, for the ball lovers and the ball heads, like we're still going to watch it, but it's not going to have like, because even when you're watching, I mean, the TBT thing is a whole different thing, but like, I just feel like that intensity, and I guess we'll find out once this game starts playing at the end of the month. I just feel like that intensity is going to be lost. And that's, to me, is huge for a playoff game. You know,
actually, as you mentioned, TBT, look who went to the finals. The 2014, the 26th, the 22nd place team.
22nd seed. Yep. Seed went to the finals.
Yeah. Yep.
That's why I said at the beginning, guys, that I would not be surprised if somebody came out of this thing and that no one else expected.
That's a good point.
So with that said, then I'll start with you, O'Neal. Who would be your dark horse in this out of these 22 teams? Who would be your dark horse going into this campus, this bubble?
Who would be my dark horse?
I mean, I know the playoffs hasn't been set yet, but you know, looking at the, let me just pull up the standings really quickly, because I think so. How does it work again? So how it works again is basically the with the 8 seed team, any team that's within 4 games of the 8th seed is going to get to play in like a one game playoff.
Yeah.
A play-in game, exactly. Mm. So you got like basically Washington's the only one who's, I mean, I'm sure that both Washington and Orlando's going to catch Brooklyn, who's the 7th seed. And then, you know, you got Portland in the West, you got Portland, Sacramento, the Spurs and New Orleans.
You know what? I was actually thinking the Rockets.
The Rockets?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay, and reason being, like, why do you think the Rockets?
So, it reminded me when I came back from, when I was back from school, and we were playing in men's tournaments. You know, every summer, Kenny, we would have about 4 or 5 tournaments starting in around June. That was really, you know, it was like, you know, all the ex-ballers.
The good old days.
Good old days, yeah. We just had tournaments. And I remember we put together a team. And we're the tallest guy on our team was 6'5", right? And we're a small team. The tallest guy was 6'5", which was me. And we had about, you know, six, seven guys. And we won the tournament. And we won the tournament because it was small ball. When teams would go, you know, when teams were going up against big teams with big 6'9", 6'10", 7-footers. But all we did was we just scrambled and helped each other. We front, ball pressure, right? And I'm watching the Rockets play, and I was just thinking back to that. That's how we were winning our tournaments. We had quick guys that could guard the perimeter. We had quick guys that could scramble. We're interchangeable. We could switch anything. So when teams are running plays, there's really, we're just switching everything and help and doing a lot of help. Right, and I think, you know, I think the Rockets are surprising people because it's one of those things where, you know, they went big, or they had Capella. He was clogging the key for Westbrook, who we know analytically was horrible. And so, like, you know what? Let's just get rid of Capella. Do we really need a big? How much points is he really giving us? They go 5 out, spread the floor for Westbrook, and the man's unstoppable. Right? Nobody can stay in front of him. So. And then defensively, right, their guys are so interchangeable and could scramble. Now, I know in the playoffs, things slow down to half court, but I really believe, you know, if they do a lot of scrambling a lot of changing. You know, you never know, man. They, you know, they might surprise a lot of teams, right? So if a dark horse, the Rockets, it's coming out of the West. My dark horse is coming out of the West. It's either the Rockets or the Mavericks. That would be my dark horses.
Okay. What about you, what about you, Kenny?
So, my dark horse is going to be the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
And it's a lot of what you just talked about. They don't have a real good big man, but you got a lot of young, interchangeable ball players. You know, 6'7", 6'8". They can all dribble. They can all defend. And then you got Kemba Walker. He's not as good as Kyrie as a basketball player. But on the Boston Celtics, he's better for the Boston Celtics as a point guard for that team. And I think that team will probably, they can roll that ball out, and those guys will move that ball and play better than teams that will have to get their big man acclimated. That's my dark horse.
Okay.
That's my surprise team.
Okay.
What about you, Curtis?
Ooh, I like those picks. I would throw two out there. I would say the Pelicans, just because.
Damn it!
Just because. Is that what you had?
I knew I should have spoke first. Go on.
But just because their schedule is so easy, the momentum they're going to have, they're going to catch. Because their schedule is so easy, they can pick up momentum and pick up speed and pick up confidence in a hurry. And that may be easy, or like it may be a hard thing to stop once they start going. Mm-hmm. And plus, the fact that, you know, the whole world wants to see Zion in the big moment. I'm not saying he's going to get calls. I'm not saying the referee different for the Pelicans. But the NBA is going to make it damn interesting for them to push through. The second team is Denver. I like Denver. I think they made some noise last year. They do have the big, but the big is a special big.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very special big, and they're young.
Did he lose too much weight?
I don't think so. I don't think because the IQ. The IQ is so high on his part.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be faster. You know?
Yeah. You know what I mean? And again, to what we've been saying, I think that the dark horse is going to be a young team. They're a young team. And the thing about them being, they're young and they've tasted it. They were there. They tasted it. You know, they tasted some playoff success in the last 2 years. So I think but yet they're still, the core of that is still young. So those two teams, I think, it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I had the Pelicans because I think the Zion factor, that's if they make it to the playoffs, if they make it to that, they get within four games of the eighth seed and they, because Memphis is playing pretty well too. Everybody's forgetting about Ja Morant, who apparently put on about 15 pounds of muscle since this hiatus. So, so he's coming in bigger and stronger too. And I think the Zion factor is going to be something, because even in that time that you saw him play, I mean, you could see he was getting himself back into shape, but he was, I wouldn't say unstoppable, but he was very hard to guard already. The fact that he was still playing out of shape and still trying to get his bearings together. Now you're giving this guy four months off to be completely in shape. Now he's back to his shape where he was when he was at Duke. And as far as they say, he's pretty much pain free in his knee. So we're talking about actually.
I've got one thing about the Pelicans, though, guys. Mm-hmm. One thing about the Pelicans that concerns me, and that is, what's the tall, skinny forward that's on the team who Ingram. Was the leading scorer?
Brandon Ingram.
I do not believe Brandon Ingram is willing to concede, and in the tough, close game, I think he will take a lot of dumb shots and cause them to lose.
Kenny, you know, I'm glad you said that, because the reason why I picked the Rockets outside of, you know, I have the Clippers winning, right?
Right.
But the reason why I picked the Rockets outside as a dark horse or the Mavericks what we're forgetting about is you need guys that are going to make shots in big moments. I call them big shot makers in big moments. The Pelicans don't have that. They don't have that.
Yeah.
Right? Who's going
to... Other than Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, but Jrue Holiday hasn't been in this situation. He's never been in this situation before. I love Jrue Holiday. I love the way he plays. But when has he been in the NBA Finals
he's been in the playoffs. The last time they were in the playoffs, him and Anthony Davis played really well until they ran into Golden State. But yeah,
so
that's what I
look at. Which team has a big shot maker when the pressure is on not only to take the shot but to make the shot? And that's what I look for.
Yeah,
right. You have with the Lakers. I think it's not Anthony Davis. I think it's going to be LeBron that has to take the big shot. With the Clippers, we know it's going to be Kawhi. And, you know, with the Rockets, or you have Harden, I'm not trusting Westbrook.
I was about to say.
And then with the Mavericks, it's Luka Doncic, because he's done it through his career from 16 years old. He's winning playoff games in big pressure situations. He's carrying his team. International stage, when you play for your country, and in Europe, they take that shit seriously. You see guys like Mark Gasol here, average like 10 points. He goes and plays international basketball. He's dropping 50 points a game. So these guys, take it seriously. So I'm looking at the team that has that big shot maker, you know, because that's what it comes down to. We know that every year in and year out, you have that player that steps up and puts the team on his back, takes the shot, but also makes the shot. And I don't think the Pelicans have that. I don't think they have that.
I would say one thing with that, though. I agree with you, but because this is a very different circumstance with no crowds, with no people, nobody giving you the finger, I think the pressure is alleviated a lot. It's not like the past, where, again, with that home court advantage matters. I think playing in front of no crowd and just, you know, the players may be mic'd up, I don't know, whatever. I think it's a whole different circumstance. So I don't think you're going to be as tight.
And that's where, to lend to your Houston Rockets point, this is where I think Westbrook is not going to hurt you as much, because the pressure and the emotions of the crowd, especially on the road, we've seen it too, especially since he's been the main guy on OKC. He's made terrible decisions on the road, completely terrible decisions. And now you're taking that pressure away from him. So
the thing about Russell is this. Houston is the team where the lane is going to be wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Every other team, when he was on OKC, you had a big man in the paint. And Russell was the guy who had to make the decision all of the time. So now you're going to have James Harden bringing the ball up. And when they pass the ball to Russell can do what he does best, which is attack the hole. Nobody can keep that man in front of him.
Nope.
Nobody. But having said all of that, I'm going to go back to my team from Boston. We got two guys that can hit clutch shots at the end of the game. You got two guys.
Three.
That's right. Kemba and then the young Dawson.
Four. So who's the other guy?
Tatum.
The Utah Hayward, yeah.
Hayward.
Boston's
got some players.
On the flip side, I don't consider Boston a dark horse, though, because they're too good to be a dark horse. I consider dark horses to be, you know, the lower echelon teams. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I consider Boston to be up there, one of the better teams.
I picked them as a dark horse because right now I think they're like third or fourth. They're not one or two.
No, yeah, they are. They're third. They're third in the East. The Nuggets are third in the West. Celtics are third in the East. But you know what? I agree with the Celtics coming out of East. As much as I like, you know, the Raptors. Again, I don't know. The only one, I don't know if who's going to be their big shot maker. It's either Van Fleet or Lowry. I don't know.
I don't see Siakam
doing it.
You know what? It's funny because I know they're not really a dark horse, but considering the lack of respect they've been getting, especially during these last 4 months, when everybody's talking about like the conference finals and the finals are going to make it, they never mention the Raptors. So that's why I kind of put them as my dark horse. Because
let me tell you something.
Go ahead, Kenny, before I say.
I was going to say, Listen, I love that Queens game.
Yeah,
I love that game.
Yep.
From Wichita. Yep,
I love his game. Back no, he's from Wichita. Rockford. Rockford,
no, no, but
Illinois.
He played at Wichita State. But
no, I know.
No, no, for sure. But
I love his game, man. He can't jump over a phone book, but his change of speed.
Oh, he's tough.
His head, his IQ. He's always probing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always looking for that defense to relax and just attack him.
Yep. And he's trying to bring Anwan back. And he's trying to bring Anwan back. So that means you got to give him respect for that too.
Yeah, I got the
Raptors coming out of the East just for the no respect. The Rodney Dangerfield thing that they're getting. Let's go back from last year. Even when they won, people are like, they got a horseshoe up their ass. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because all the injuries and all this stuff, they didn't deserve to win. Blah 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 blah. You know, and so they were disrespected. Even being a champion, they were disrespected. And then coming into this league without Kawhi, people are like, "Well, they're done. They without Kawhi, they're done." Lo and behold, they're the same record, pretty much from last year without Kawhi.
They were
still rolling. And number three, that defense. Is dope, man.
Mm-hmm.
Second best defense in the league behind Milwaukee.
Yeah, that defense is gonna stop you. And number four, I love the fact that that the coaching strategies, they're doing high school coaching strategies. They're doing he'll do whatever it takes to win. Like out of the box, you'll do something out of the box.
But you know what it is? It's you know, Kenny mentioned earlier that it's a copycat league, but that's what I love about Nick Nurse because Nick Nurse was like, you know what? Why not try this? Yeah, as a basketball player, I'm watching. I'm like, why didn't they just do this? Why didn't they just do that? But you know, everybody just seems to do the same thing in the NBA. But then it's like, why don't they just press full court? If you have quick athletic guys, why don't one time just go full court press? See what happens. Go to a full court trap. See what happens.
And he's showing
you.
That's
what I love about Nick Nurse.
And he's showing you that he can't be copied. because he keeps running all these different defenses, to be honest with you.
I'm very interested to see, with all the time he's had to think about the advantages of not having home court and the bubble and so forth and so and the short season, the concise season now, I'm very interested to see what he throws together, play-wise.
Well, to lend to that, think about it. Look at his coaching career. He's coached basically on every... I want to say every part of the continent, but like he's coached like in every scenario from high school to small leagues to these little bullshit leagues all the way to a championship last year. So there's not going to be, even a scenario like this, he's probably looking at this like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun. And my guys are healthy. Marc Gasol lost weight. His hammy's fine. We're getting everybody back. You know, Chris Boucher's put on about 10 to 15 pounds. You know, Terrence Davis is going to be a rotation. Like, he's not going to be a rookie anymore. You know, he already kind of wasn't playing like one. And now, like, you're giving him that, you know, like, again, a break to improve and get better and get stronger. I think they're going to be a real problem. I wouldn't be surprised if they came out just because of the, as you're saying, again, Curtis, the whole chip on your shoulder factor. I just think the thing that scares me though was that I went to the Bucks game when the last time the Bucks came to Toronto right before the pandemic hit, and the thing that made me nervous was watching Siakam go up against Giannis. I can tell you from being at that game, he could barely look Giannis in his face, and that is what makes me a little nervous if they met up in the 7-game series.
But if they play them in the playoffs, they're going to congest that paint again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be very difficult for the Greek Freak to get into the paint in the play.
Yep.
He doesn't have.
Yep.
He can attack the basket, but he doesn't have good low post moves.
Nope, and he doesn't have a mid range game, which he never worked. Should have been working on. Mm-hmm. Didn't work on.
Well, we'll find out if he worked on it now during this time. But I mean, it's a small sample size. But is you know he was shooting league average, like he was about league average from three. Which is a great improvement from the year before. The difference is, though, Kenny, is like everything you said is totally true. But on the flip side now, Milwaukee's defense, why they're number one, when you see them in person, them boys are big and long as hell. As hell. Like, you see how hard it is for these guys to get to score in the paint. It is hard as hell for them guys to get baskets. Like at least the game that I saw, it was tough for any one of them guys to get baskets in the paint. They had to just take threes and mid-range shots, because anything in the paint, Brook Lopez was there, Robin Lopez was there, Giannis was there, Middleton, who's 6'7", was there, Marvin Williams coming off the bench, who's 6'10", was there, Ilyasova was coming off the bench that was there. It's just tough, man. It's just tough. So that's what worries me about the Raptors. But other than that, I think they have a great shot to make it to the finals. Before we move on to the next topic and wrap this up, so I'll start with you, Curtis. Who's your top four, like your predicted top four, and then who do you have winning it?
My predicted top four. Yeah. So the semifinals.
Conference finals for each conference, and then who do you got winning it?
I say coming out of the East, I'm staying with the Raptors. And
beating who?
You know what? Like, I'll say Milwaukee, but I'm tempted to say Miami. I think I was just thinking Miami too as a dark horse. Miami stuff, man. But they got dogs. They got dogs up and down.
Yes, they do.
They're grimy. Yeah.
Very much so.
But I'll stay with the Raps and Milwaukee. But again, Miami's it's right there. You know, on the West, I think Clippers. And I think it's Clippers and LA. To be honest with you,
Clippers and Lakers.
I think it's Clippers and Lakers. But I like Denver. I think Denver. I like Denver. I think Denver is right there for me as well. But I'll go with the Clippers and the LA thing, because I think the narrative to push LeBron through. It's the same as the Zion situation. I'm not saying he's going to get calls, but he's going to get calls, you know, because what better way to end this shit than to have LeBron walking out with a trophy? I think Clippers wins it all. I go with Kamaka's what you said a couple of minutes back. I think Clippers wins it all.
Okay. What about you, Kenny?
I know that was all over the map, but shit. Sorry.
No, that was good. That's good. I tell you what, that Miami one, that's a good pick.
Yep.
So, from the East, I'm going to say that Boston will be in there, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's really tough for me to pick between Milwaukee and Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to jinx Toronto, but I'm going to pick Toronto because I'm not sure if Giannis has picked up a playoff game. Like, the game changes, it slows up, and I think he may struggle a bit for Milwaukee. Although, in the regular season, they look terrific. So, from the East, I'm going to take Boston and Toronto. And in the West, I'm going with the two best players in the game, LeBron and Kawhi. And because this is a short season, it is a long layup. Okay, which means some of these players are going to have to get into their rhythm again. I'm going to say a team from the East is going to win it all, and I'm going with Boston.
I got, as I'm looking at this, I got the Raptors and the Heat in the conference finals. Because, they're playing 8 games in the playoffs. Nothing's really going to change. Raptors are 2, Celtics are 3. Miami, I got the Raptors beating the Celtics, and the Heat beating the Bucks, upsetting the Bucks. And then, I got nobody's beating the 2 LA teams, so they're going to the conference finals. And, I got the Clippers, man. They got some grimy dudes, too. And I just believe in Kawhi Leonard. He's emotionless. He's emotionless. He's even, you know, his motion doesn't change. Good or bad, he doesn't get high, he doesn't get low, he's just there. And he just hoops.
Is he healthy?
Yeah, he's healthy. They said he's 4 months off. There was a quote that came from Doc. They're like, he's good. But they're still going to take the time with him. They're still going to do what their original plan was, just to, make, just get him
going for the playoffs. But I'm I got the Clippers.
I think the Bucks are gonna make it through. They're gonna play the Raptors in the conference final, I think. And it's funny, you're talking about Miami. I'm hearing reports that Oladipo is really thinking about coming back because he's apparently all the way healthy now. I think that makes Indiana tough if he comes back too. I think that's going to be a hell of a first round series because I think Miami and the Pacers are the fourth and fifth seeds, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. So that's going to be a hell of a first round series right there, especially if Oladipo is back, because Oladipo and Brogdon, I think that's going to be a problem in the playoffs. With that said, yeah, I would say the Bucks is going to be their time just because I think defensively they're just going to be so stifling. But we'll see what happens. Like everybody else, I'm Lakers Clippers. I also have the Clippers winning it all because to lend to what O'Neal was saying, not just the fact that Kawhi is emotionless. Look, even if everything, you know, pre-COVID, like if this stuff didn't happen and the playoffs happened and it was the best of LA at the Staples Center for all seven games and 70% of the fans are Lakers fans, that's not going to faze Kawhi. Kawhi's the one guy where that he's not going to be like, well, how come we ain't got more Clippers fans in the stands? He's not going to care. Mm-hmm. And I think in turn, if the team follows him like how the Raptors followed him last year, they're not going to care either by that mm-hmm. time. So now you're taking away that whole element now. You know what I mean? You're taking away that whole element. So somebody like Kawhi is this actually bubble thing is like actually really built for him the most, I think, because you're just taking away all the extra frills and stuff. He, like, to him, honestly, I mean, we don't know him, but to him, I think he probably would rather all the extra frills to be gone. You know what I mean? Yeah, so
that's his personality.
Yeah. So I think between that and the fact that now he's healthy too, and you got PG who's now healthy because remember he had the two shoulder surgeries, and he had an extra 4 months to recover now. Yeah, I think they're going to be the biggest problem.
That's a tough team.
Yeah, they're going to be a big problem, especially defensively as well. Like once they start clicking in the playoffs, man, oof, Lord.
Yo, wouldn't it be crazy if
this was going to happen though? Patrick Beverly's going to sneak out. And then he's going to come back, and he's going to affect about three or four players.
wouldn't it be crazy if the Raptors meet the Clippers in the finals?
That would be awesome.
Ooh, that would be crazy.
What a scenario that would be, man.
That would be awesome.
That would be crazy.
I'm rooting for that personally. That would be crazy.
And I'm going to tell you something. Toronto would like their chances.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So to move on from this topic before we wrap up, I want to get everybody's thoughts on the McCurr Maker situation in terms of the high school recruit, the All-American high school recruit who's chosen Howard University to attend college this fall, making a definite huge pivot in terms of how athletes think coming out of high school in terms of the process of always wanting to go to a big school, and even if they're one and done, they want to commit to the big school, the one that has the most power and prestige and TV time and everything else. The fact that he's chosen to go to an HBCU isn't lost on me, and I'm sure as well as you guys. So I want to get your thoughts before we wrap up on what do you think the effects of this are going forward and just him just committing to an HBCU. So I'm going to leave you last, Kenny, because I know you have a lot of things to say on it. So we're gonna come to you, but let's start with O'Neal first, and then I'll save you for last.
I say good for him. I just hope he graduates, because I know if it was me, I wouldn't be focused. I would be like all these beautiful black women walking around. Oh, good Lord. every night be partying, having fun. Man, I got homework. Oh, forget that. I'm gonna go hang out. So I don't know, but I think you know what? I think that's great. I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It brings me. I'll just say this real quick. It brings me back to a conversation when I was at St. Mary's, and we're having study hall, and you know we're there laughing like the black players on the team, and we're like, man, I wish we were at an all black school. This would be over, right? It would be because you know, we'll be in our element. We'll be around people who we know, right? And I just think that's fantastic. And HBCUs and, you know, how just how the black culture gets down and how we have fun and just be a totally different environment. And, you know, like for my white counterparts that when I was at school at St. Mary's, how they were loving it. They were loving college life and just having a blast. And not that I didn't, but I just know it would have been just a way more different experience. I know if I was at an all-black school and just, you know, so kudos to these guys. We're in different times. And you know what? The league has definitely changed. In the past, if you wanted to go to the NBA, it was like you had to go to a Power 5 conference, a power school. Now, you know, when you know, you don't have to. You see guys coming out of Davidson, you know, Creighton,
right.
Lehigh, you know, Dayton. Weber State.
Dayton.
You know, so mm-hmm. Dayton. So why not? Why not? Why not go to HBCU? And get drafted to the NBA. So I think it's fantastic.
So what you're basically saying is that you definitely would have had to been a one and done player if you went to HBCU.
Hey, yeah, exactly. I would have been one and done.
Understood. You know what, Kenny? I'm actually gonna go to you now. Change my mind. Let's go to you next.
Okay. No, look, first of all, what I told you when we talked the other day, I don't care how successful this young man is. He is my absolute favorite college basketball player right now. I think it was a courageous and bold and enlightened decision that he made.
Hold on, Kenny. I got to remind you have a son playing college ball. But anyhow, go ahead. Just gotta put that out there. I just got to put that out there. Young man's going to be a sophomore, and he's pretty good. I just got to put that out
there. he's not at an HBCU, though. And I know what it's like because my brother went to Hanson University, and I used to visit him at that campus, and oh, my goodness.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah. I just want to say, so back in the day, it wasn't so unusual. So we had players like Earl the Pearl Monroe, Willis Reed, Sam Jones, Al Adams, Bobby Dandridge, Rick Mahorn, Charles Oakley, Ben Wallace.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All came from HBCU.
Preach.
And they made it. And so this young brother, if he does well, it'll be wonderful, especially in the age of one and done. Only thing that may prevent it is that if some of these families are in need of money,
mm-hmm.
and the HBCUs don't have the boosters with the pockets to pay these guys.
Hmm.
But besides that, I think it's a wonderful thing.
Yep.
And sorry, before we move to Curtis, where's your son going?
It's Robert Westman also.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Okay. He's following the grassroots, basically.
Yeah. He's enjoying it. His experience is a lot different from mine.
Hold on, but he's a stud. Give him his stats for his freshman year. Come on, Kenny.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
No.
I'm not doing that.
Yo, the boy's a stud, man. The boy's a stud.
He was rookie of the year in the conference.
That's real good.
No.
Okay, so Curtis, what are your thoughts?
I think it's a great thing. I think it's the right person to do it, the right type of person in regards to him being a five star, on a one and done type caliber player.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think like a top 20 kid, top 10 kid. Doesn't matter where he goes. I think he'll still be a top. You know, a one-and-done player. It doesn't matter if he goes to a Power 5 conference or a Howard. I think his reputation precedes him. And it doesn't matter where he plays. It's his 1 year out of high school. He's still going to be a one-and-done. So I think it's a great opportunity for the college. It's a great opportunity for the league. I would like to see it repeated. Really and truly, what was Blakely, the Howard coach, said?
Yeah, Kenny Blakely.
He said they have to do this right. He said they can't F it up. Because if they F it up, it's going to screw up timeline. for other top five kids to follow.
Right.
I think it's great. I think it's great for the conference. I think it's great for the school. Hopefully, it sparks something that it maybe, and with the racial climate that's going on now, it's also another perfect time for this to happen. You know, in the future, again, maybe he's the leader to bring all these other young AAU kids to go to HBCUs, and make it a one and done process and bring money to the league and bring money to the programs. You know, it had to be done. I think it had to be done by a five star kid, because most of the HBCUs, they get, you know, two stars max a three star player they would get player.
Yeah,
you know. So this could be a great turning point. I also saw the other day. I think Kenny, I was telling you the other day. I saw a top 10 football player, decided to make Howard one of his top picks. He didn't pick Howard yet, but he made it Howard one of his top picks again. I think it's following the lead of Maker, right? So hopefully this starts something. It'll be great. Like Kenny said, he's going to be one of my favorite players. One of my favorite players, because my son is, I'm going to get his jersey first. Jill, and I'll get your jersey first. I'm like Kenny. Just want to put that out there. I think it'll be cool to get a Maker Howard jersey. I think that'll be cool.
Well, there is a freshman this year by the name of Mikey Williams. I don't know if you guys heard of him.
Yeah.
He's the third ranked freshman. Things could change, but he's certainly a five star recruit right now as a freshman. And supposedly Howard is one of the schools he's considered.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll see what happens. Because he's still got some time, but let's see if he sticks with that. I hope he does, because he's talking strongly about that right now. Which I think that's also really great as well. So about 4 years ago, we did an episode about this particular topic, about the one and done life. The episode was called, and it was regarding people of that ilk of being like a five star recruit or a one and done player, or a Fab Five situation that will commit to go to Howard. I was looking at it from the perspective of both those aspects of if a one and done player or three or four five-star recruits all decide to go to a HBCU. Like, what would that do to change the school? And we had the big discussion on it. But I think, like, part of that is, I mean, it's a clusterfuck of a lot of things with regarding the anti-black racism, the years of the NCAA overstepping the lines about how they distribute the profits to the kids, being habitual line steppers in that aspect. I think there's a whole bunch of things that comes into that effect. But to me, the reason why I was looking at that, like even 4 years ago, was because I'm like, for a one and done player, it doesn't really matter, as you're saying before, Kurt, it doesn't matter where you go. You're most likely not going to really drop too far down in your draft status. You know what I mean? You're probably, if you're a projected lottery pick going into the following year, unless something happens or you do disastrous at that HBCU, more than likely, it's probably not going to affect you that much. You know what I mean? Depending on the kind of player that you are. Like, and I look at it, for example, from the aspect of like a Zion and RJ Barrett, for example. I know they went to Duke. We all watched the games. But man, can you imagine if they went to Hampton or they went to Bethune-Cookman or Howard? Like, the TV stations would be forced to have to watch those games. Like, everybody would have to try to change their narrative to watch these games. You know, like, and I remember you were saying, Kenny, offline, but, like, you know, some of these five-star recruits, like a Zion or certain guys, they got hundreds of thousands of followers. So you're bringing that influence to their games right off the top. So you have to kind of pay attention.
Yep.
You know? I forgot about that.
Yeah. Like, that's a big, it's a great point that you made offline. I couldn't jack it because I don't know you that well, so I don't want to jack it from you and say that was my point.
You got it.
but with that said, though, honestly, like it's. I think that's super important. Like, I keep looking at the Gonzaga factor because, like, 20 years ago, Gonzaga was some small school that nobody knew, you know. And
I knew Gonzaga.
Well, you knew Gonzaga, because they were in your conference that you played in. But the only thing I knew about Gonzaga was that John Stockton played there. That was it. That's the only thing I knew about Gonzaga, and that they were in the state of Washington. That was it. But, you know, going forward, 20 years later, they're one of the top teams in the, you know, they're top 10 footing with the number one position every single year, and they're still in the same conference. They haven't left the Big West, right? So, like, I think that is a huge factor, because that has also made the conference better because of their success. It's kind of the rising tide lifts all boats, right?
It's not the Big West.
Not the Big West, sorry. Not the Big West. What's the name of the conference?
West Coast
Conference.
Stop disrespecting my conference, eh? WCC, homie. Stop disrespecting it.
West Coast Conference. I'm sorry. West Coast Conference. That's what I meant. That's what I meant. But truth be told, like, the rising tide lifts all boats, right? So, like, other teams, like a St. Mary's, wasn't last year they beat them? They beat them in the conference final and in the conference tournament, right? Like, that says a lot right there. That's what I mean. So if you can get, I mean, it's going to take some time, but if you can get some more commits from these five-star recruits to keep going to these HBCUs, or like the MEAC now is going to raise at some point, it's going to start raising the value. The more money is going to be pumped into it. There's the TV contracts will get better, and that's going to it's going to, you know, have a snowball effect.
The conference will have a better reputation, and then you've got teams like Hampton that just recently moved out of the MEAC. They'll probably want to try to come back now.
That's right. Where did Hampton, what conference did Hampton go into?
They went to the Big South, I believe.
Okay.
It's another HBCU conference. But they went to that conference because the MEAC conference was considered or ranked lower than the Big South conference.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see. We're all definitely going to be tracking that story. You know, hopefully, you know, with this COVID situation, we're gonna have a normal season, and if so, like, we're definitely gonna be tracking his success. This could be amazing. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of everything that's been happening, especially socially, like, for him to have that success to still be a first round lottery pick or what have you, and if that doesn't stop his progress, like there's gonna be more guys looking at this model. Because again, you're looking at the G League now spending money on these, you know, like these high school players wanted to sacrifice their college career and play. Like, you're having that aspect too. So, like, the NCAA model is being chipped away. Like, the actual big power is gonna start to chip away. It's funny. Like, I think in the next 10, 15 years, the NCAA is gonna be looking vastly different in my eyes. But before we wrap up, is there anything else you guys want to add before we wrap up?
What would be interested in the NCAA model is changing rapidly in regards to the the players getting paid for their likeness. I think that'll be challenging for like the G League aspect as well, because instead of going to a G League team and getting paid $300,000, maybe you stay at your school with big boosters where you can get 4, 5, 6. Imagine if Zion was able to get paid at Duke
for his likeness.
How much money would it make?
Like $400,000?
It might have been a million. It might have been a million.
I think it would have been more, because nationally, the attention he was getting. So that would have challenged the whole G League aspect of luring them with money, right? And that's what, 2 years away. So it's going to be interesting. The future is interesting.
Yeah, it is. That's right. Zion got more than money, by the way. In South Carolina, his family had a ranch, a 1,300 square foot ranch in South Carolina. And then they moved that year to North Carolina in this mansion.
Okay, there you go. But that's property. They probably sold the ranch and bought that house in North Carolina, right?
Of course they did.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they bought it. Yeah,
of course.
They bought it already.
Exactly. Black men don't cheat, and we buy property at the legal rate.
That's right.
You can pay $1,100 a month, and then you can go from $1,100 to $8,000.
So with that, Kenny, imagine how much more than a million he probably would have made if he was able to get legally paid by these sponsors.
Yeah, it'd be crazy.
Yeah, you're right.
Honestly, he might have had his own shoe had that come out.
His own shoe contract. Yeah.
Seriously, because what would have stopped it? So, like, in the terms of like a McCurr maker, like, yeah, I'm gonna be looking for his jersey, you know, next year to have a Howard jersey. Like, that's gonna be a thing now, you know. Like, and that's I think that's sick. But with that said, fellas, look, guys, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. It's definitely been
Thanks
a pleasure
having
this conversation for sure. You know, with this playoff bubble coming back, you know, I'm definitely gonna be doing some playoff series and talking about different games and such, so I'd definitely be glad to have all you guys back, even if it's separately at the same time, don't matter to me, you know. Definitely be glad to have you guys back on. But thank you guys, like, it's definitely been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on to discuss The Last Dance. It was great. I really enjoyed talking about The Last Dance and just what all the goodness of NJ. But thank you.
Yo,
I appreciate that, Calvin. You're amazing,
this whole,
man.
After this whole COVID thing, you got to go over and give him a hug, Calvin.
I really do. I got to come with a bottle of Appleton now. Like, I definitely
yep,
have to come. I definitely have to come with a bottle of Appleton. Or maybe I should social distance and just leave it on your doorstep.
It's Ray and Nephew Gold. Ray and Nephew Gold.
Oh, Ray.
Damn.
Yeah, Ray and Nephew Gold.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you the flask.
Whatever, man. All right.
Hey, hold on. Before we go, seeing that we vented out on Vince Carter, you want to vent out for about 2-3 minutes on Michael Jordan before we go?
Listen, so for me, I knew everything about The Last Dance. Everything that was in there, I knew, except for Horace Grant, where, you know, Jordan was like, the only people that knew about the Republicans are, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too. He goes, I sent that comment to Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant. Mm-hmm. But everything else, like, I didn't understand how people, like, made Scottie Pippen look bad. I'm like, wait a minute. You can watch NBA Classics and see that game where Scottie Pippen didn't go in. Right, or you can watch that game 7 against the Pistons where he had the migraine. So I don't know how you didn't make Scott look. This is all known fact. I think just the thing with Horace Grant might not have been a known fact. But other than that, I loved it. I thought it was great. It was a way to go down, you know, it took me down memory lane. And I would say they should have ended the documentary when Jordan gave that speech about, you know, bringing his team, you know, like, you know, when he said, if guys didn't want to come along, was their choice, but I didn't ask guys to do anything that I wouldn't do. I thought they should have ended the doc, even though they ended episode 7. That I think that should have been the ending for the whole documentary, because that was just perfect, beautiful.
Is that when he teared up?
Yeah, that's when he teared up.
Yeah,
they should have used that to end the documentary, because, you know, like, that's what you tell guys. Like, I always preach as a coach, if your best player is not your hardest worker, you're not going to win. Right, and your best player has to be one of your hardest workers. And you know, the fact that Jordan worked so hard, and you know how people can't see what he was doing. I'm like, he says it like they had to go through the Bad Boy Pistons, who was beating. You had to be mentally tough. You had to be built a certain way mentally to do well. And that's what Jordan was doing. And I had teammates that were like that were toughing you up in practice, right? So that when you went up against opponents, you were mentally tough. So I just loved it. I loved everything about it, and I thought it was a great documentary. Thanks, Calvin.
No problem. No problem. That's what I do.
I don't have anything to say because I said it in the Last Dance episode.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you all for tuning in to the AV Podcast. Special shout-out goes out to O'Neal Kamaka, Kenny Lee, and Big Brother Curtis for hopping on the AV to discuss the NBA restart and everything that's attached to the NBA bubble. Thanks again for the conversation, fellas. I enjoyed that. The new season, new NBA season, I like to call it, starts on July 30th. Let's hope for all of the basketball fans out there that it goes off without a hitch. Let's hope. We'll see what happens going forward, but one thing's for sure is the NBA is hoping and praying that Zion comes back to the campus before this restart. And hopefully everything works out for Zion's family. But it would be a shame if he misses this restart. Again, we'll see what happens. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to South Sharaf Radio on all your platforms. Hit the like button and the five-star button over and over and over again like you're trying to win a video game. Specifically on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And check out SouthSharaf.com to go through my entire catalog of podcast shows. Once again, that's SouthSharaf.com. For Kenny Lee, O'Neal Kamaka, and Big Brother Curtis, my name is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Sharaf Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace. We out. Have a great weekend.